You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
And Investigator Wright, if you could please look at those two pages. And do you recognize those receipts?
Yes, I do.
And do those appear to be images of the receipts you recovered from Walmart?
Yes, they are.
Your Honor, the state would move for admission of State's Exhibit 227A and B. I believe they may have been stipulated to, but if not, I believe foundation's been laid.
All right. Any objection to the admission of 227A?
Judge, there was a previous stipulation regarding the business records with Walmart, and the agreement was that these exhibits would be stipulated to.
All right. So 227A and 227B are both now admitted.
Thank you, Your Honor. And if they can just be handed to the court. Thank you. Outside of recovering the receipts for those dates in question, was there anything in relation to the data location for another device associated with Alex Cox that caught your attention?
No, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'll rephrase.
What you're asking.
On this slide, there's some timestamps. Are those in relation to some data location?
Oh, yes. Yes. So the receipts showed the purchase of prepaid cellular phones from TracFone. And those purchases were made on, one was made on September 25th, 2019 and 1910. And the other one was made on October 8th, 2019 at 1525. And in the course of my review of Alex Cox's main phone, his Verizon phone, and the Homer J. Maximus account, the data file I received from Nick Balance, I was reviewing his location at those particular times. And so on that same date, September 25th, 2019, from 1903 to 1918, I showed Alex Cox's phone, his device, being at the Walmart of 500 South Utah Avenue in Idaho Falls. That would cover the same time that item was being purchased, that track phone was being purchased. Now, that track phone purchase was a cash purchase, and it'd include only the phone and a 35-minute phone card and nothing else. On October 8th, I conducted a similar review and noted that Alex Cox's phone was at Walmart in Rexburg at 1451 North 2nd East between 1501 and 1537. And I noted that the receipt for the purchase of the track phone, also a cash transaction that included just the phone and a 35-minute card, took place at 1525 within the range of the period of time when I showed Alex Cox's device being at that same Walmart.
And again, I know we've talked about this, but this was did turn into a joint investigation?
Yes.
Did you look at some other data points associated with a device linked to Alex Cox for the end of September into the beginning of October?
Yes, I did.
And what did you determine in relation to that information?
This was the data file that I received from Nick Balance for Alex Cox's primary device. And I continued that review until the end of that data that he provided me, which was the end of September. It actually ended in the evening of September 30th, 2019. At a later date, Nick Balance, a few months later, provided to me the month of October in a similar file for that same device. And I continued a review of that, and I completed that in September of 2020. So in the course of that review, I noted some activity on the device from September 30th through October 3rd. On the afternoon of September 30th, the device was in Alex Cox's apartment, or seemed to be associated with that, between 1317 and 1622. And then there was a period of nearly 3 days that the device did not return to Unit 107. So the rest of September 30th, October 1st, and October 2nd, it was not in Unit 107 or did not appear to go there at all based on the data I observed. the device stayed each of those nights in Unit 175, though there was some movement of the device on at least two of those days, but the movement of the device was within Rexburg itself. On October 3rd, the device then goes back to 107 for the first time at 1420. And again, that was the first time it had been there since September 30th at 1632, based on the data I reviewed.
Was there any other occasion where that device stayed in 175 all night?
I believe that was the only time it was there all night, other than from the time the device first appeared in 107, which was starting September 5th. So from the 1st through the 4th, it had been in 175 at night. But after that, it wouldn't stay the entire night there. It typically stayed the entire night in 107.
And the attempted shooting of Brandon Boudreau was on October 2nd?
Yes, in Arizona. But this device did not leave Idaho, from what I observed during that particular date.
And previously on September 25th, this device was at a Walmart where another phone was purchased?
Yes.
As part of your investigation, did you also look into data associated with the device and gun ranges?
Yes, I did.
And with regard to the month of September, what did you find in relation to that?
I discovered that it went to gun ranges on multiple days in the month of September.
And can you tell us what we're seeing on this slide?
Yes, the first time I observed that device go to a gun range in the data I reviewed starting in the September 1st was actually on September 3rd of 2019. The device went to the same gun range two times that day. The first visit to the gun range, which is the Unified Sportsman's Gun Club in Rexburg, was at 1345, and it left almost immediately at 1346. Now, that gun range is located approximately 8 miles due west of Rexburg, and it's fairly isolated. There's not much else around that range. After it left that range that early afternoon at 1405, it arrives at a Walmart in Rexburg, and it stays till 1436. And then later that afternoon at 1459, it returns to the Unified Sportsman's Gun Club and stays there until 1651. On September 26th, I saw it go to that same Unified Sportsman's Gun Club again, and it stayed there from 1654 to 1858. Now, I noted there was some imprecise data. Sometimes it's hard to tell exactly where in the gun range it is, or I only could say it's in that general vicinity, or it seems to be at that gun range. Then on Friday, September 27th, it goes to that same gun range again, where it seems to stay from 1554 to 1845. And again, this had some, I noted there was some imprecise data and exactly breaks in the data, but it seemed to be there approximately that range of time.
And was there another date in September that you looked at in relation to that device in a gun range?
Yes, on September 28th, 2019, it went to that Unified Sportsman's Gun Club again, and was there from 1525 to 1758. On this particular date, for a period of the time it was there, we got some fairly precise data. I believe this was GPS data. And in this image, it's an image from the mapping software that I was looking at that shows an overhead view of the range. And it shows the data points for the device at the range on that date. This is one of the parking lots for the range here. This is a firing line for this particular range. There's another parking lot here for another range. On this date, at least during a period of time when it was there, we had data points as the device went further, deeper into the range. This would be an area that was likely would be something somebody walked. And there are shooting berms in this location. And typically somebody would place a target at a berm at a particular distance. And then when at appropriate time could walk down and either place the target, look at a target they'd been shooting at, or remove a target. And this seems to show the device going to this furthest berm, which I believe these are 100, 200, and 300 yard berms. But the device travels to the furthest berm and then returns.
So would those be considered the long range part of a shooting range, or the long distance part?
Yes, people shoot at all kinds of distances, depending on type of weapon and so forth. But typically at a distance like that, that's usually a long barreled weapon, a rifle or carbine that would shoot at a range that ranges more than 100 yards.
And then if we look, you talked about another range in the corner of the image. What would that range be for?
It appears to be a shorter distance range. I believe that's possibly a 50-yard range. Somebody could shoot rifle on that or pistol. Most people shoot pistol at distances shorter than that.
So where the location data is, it would be more likely linked to some kind of a rifle?
Yes, that would probably most likely be a rifle range where it seems to be there.
And Your Honor, looking at the time, I think we may be at a good place to break for lunch.
All right, that makes sense. Thank you, Ms. Blake. We will go ahead and take the lunch recess. Since we're stopping right here on time, we'll go ahead and take the 1 hour break and resume again at 1 o'clock if we can, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right, please. Thank you. Please be seated. Mr. Bailiff, we could have the jurors brought in, please.
All right. You're present and accounted for.
All right. Thank you. Please be seated. Okay. We're back on the record on CR 2221-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. We just concluded the lunch recess. Jurors are back and properly seated. Investigator Wright is on the stand. I'll remind the witness you're still under oath for your testimony. Ms. Blake was going through. We just concluded with a couple of those receipt exhibits, 227 A and B, and still, I believe, reviewing exhibit 299. So if you'd like to continue with direct, you may.
Thank you, Your Honor. And may I publish State's Exhibit 299 again?
You may.
And Investigator Wright, I think we'd left off talking about gun range data that you looked at, or location data associated with Alex Cox's device in relation to gun ranges. Do you recall that?
Yes, I do.
And we'd been talking about specifically the month of September. Did you also look at location data associated with that device for the month of October?
Yes, I did.
And what did you discover in relation to that device and shooting ranges in the month of October?
I determined that the device also went to gun ranges in October on multiple occasions.
And can you tell us what we're seeing on this slide?
Yes, one of those dates that it went to gun ranges was October 7th of 2019. And on that particular date, it actually went to a gun range on four occasions. The first gun range it went to that day was the Fremont County Sportsman's Club Public Shooting Range. That's located in St. Anthony, Idaho. And that's approximately 15 miles northeast of Rexburg. It went to that location, but didn't seem to stay for any significant duration. It basically drove there and left immediately. It then returned to 565 Pioneer Road, number 107, and was there for from 1309, really one data point, until 1309. It then left and returned to a different gun and went to a different gun range, the Unified Sportsman's Gun Club in Rexburg, and was there from 1325 to 1329, a fairly short period of time. And then it left again and went to the Fremont County Sportsman's Club Public Shooting Range again. and was there from 1350 to 1416. It then left there and returned back to 565 Pioneer Road, Unit 107, and was there from 1437 to 1443. And then returned back to the Fremont County Sportsman's Club Public Shooting Range, where it was from approximately 1503 to 1524. On October 8th, it also visited two gun ranges, the Unified Sportsman's Club Gun Club in Rexburg. And again, it went from 1028 to 1029, and it was a very short duration. It left there and later went to the Fremont County Sportsman's Club Public Shooting Range, where it was from 1107 to 1229. On that particular instance, when it was at the Fremont County Sportsman's Club Public Shooting Range, there was sufficient data to indicate that it seemed to be near a 100-yard range is where the data was.
And in relation to the investigation, was there something that happened on October 9th of 2019?
Yes, there was.
What was that?
There was an incident at the Chad and Tammy Daybell residence regarding Tammy Daybell.
And do you know what was reported to have occurred?
That in the evening of October 9th, 2019, she was in her driveway unloading her car when an unknown individual wearing a mask had pointed a weapon or paintball gun or something similar at her and then had left the area.
In relation to the location data, did you look at additional dates in October?
Yes, I did.
And with regard to the shooting ranges, what else did you learn?
That the device continued to go to gun ranges in October. It went there on October 12th, 2019, and it went to the Fremont County Sportsman's Club Public Shooting Range from 1457 to 1701, and that's in St. Anthony, Idaho. And at that time, it seemed to be near a 50-yard range. And then the following day, it also returned to that same gun range at the Fremont County Sportsman's Club Public Shooting Range and was there from 1249 to 1440. And the device appeared to be near what would both be considered both a rifle and another range, which was a pistol range. There was some data at both sites.
And to be clear, Tammy Daybell did not end up being shot on October 9th. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And this is just several days after that?
Yes.
And can you tell us a little bit about what we're seeing on this slide?
Yes. So on another occasion, another date, the device did go to shooting ranges, and that was on October 15th, 2019. And it went to the Fremont County Sportsman's Club Public Shooting Range twice on that date. It went in the morning from 8:01 to 9:20, and it appeared to be near a 50-yard range on that occasion. It left there and went to Walmart in Rexburg from 9:34 to 10:15. And then went to Alex's address at 565 Pioneer Road, number 107, from 1024 to 1216. And then went to Unit 175, Lori Vallow's residence, from 1217 to 1317. And then back to Unit 107 from 1319 to 1327. It then left there and went to the residence of Chad Daybell, 202 North, 1900 East in Rexburg, from 1341 to 1356. After that, it went back to 565 Pioneer Road to the Unit 175 and was there from 1454 to 1515, and then went to Unit 107 in that same complex from 1517 to 1601. It then left there and went to the Fremont County Sportsman's Club Public Shooting Range again that day from 1623 to 1817. And it appeared to be either at this 50-yard range or 100-yard range in that area.
And again, on this slide, we see the device leave from the apartment associated with Alex Cox and go to the residence associated with Chad Daybell. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then leave from the residence associated with Chad Daybell and go to the residence associated with Lori Vallow.
Yes.
We talked about the shooting or attempted shooting on October 9th. Did you end up looking at some additional information related to that particular day?
I did.
And can you tell us what we're seeing on this slide?
Yes, this is an image from that file I was reviewing, and it's an overhead map of the Sportsman's Warehouse at 2909 South 25th East in Ammon, Idaho. And this includes data points for October 9th, 2019.
And to back up a little bit, was part of the reason why you were looking at the gun range data in relation to this event that happened on October 9th?
Yes, it was.
With regard to the Sportsman's Warehouse, can you tell us with the cluster of data points what those are showing?
Yes. So I went there on March 9th, 2020. This was actually before I started my own review of this particular data. This was when Nick Balance was reviewing the data, and he had provided this information to me about a visit there by Alex Cox, and this same information we're looking at now. So I went to that location to see if I could conduct some follow-up investigation. The data points showed that the device was there in the vicinity of the Sportsman's Warehouse from 1534 to 1612. Some of the initial data points are up in this upper left corner on the outside of the on the back part of the parking lot. And of course, there's other businesses in that same area. So I couldn't necessarily say it was at what business it was at based on those data points. These data points here on this map are all Wi-Fi data points, and the range, the margin of error or the radius of them was between 15 and 87 meters, depending on the point. But then I observed these additional data points that are within this building here, which is the Sportsman's Warehouse itself. And for a period of time, the device seemed to be closely associated with that location.
Based on that information, did you do any additional follow-up?
Yes, on March 9th, 2019, I went to that location and spoke with employees of Sportsman's Warehouse and attempted to do some additional investigation.
Did you end up requesting receipts for a specific period of time?
Yes, I obtained receipts for a period of time that overlapped this time period that the device seemed to be at the store. So I actually asked for receipts from 1530 to 1615 for a 45-minute period. And they provided me every transaction that they had during that time period. It was almost 60 transactions, I believe.
Did you review those transaction receipts?
I did. I actually reviewed them before I left the area, and then made additional inquiries into a particular receipt that I observed.
With those receipts, did some of them have a payment form of a credit or debit card?
Yes, they did.
Were any of those associated with Alex Cox?
No, they weren't.
And you talked about a particular receipt that caught your attention. Can you tell me about that?
Yes, there was one receipt for a cash transaction. And the checkout time for the receipt was 4:11 p.m., so just a minute or so before the device left the area. And it was for five items. And the receipt is a little difficult to read, but the five items are listed here on the right. And this is how they're listed on the receipt. One was something called M's Woodland Cam. Another one was Kenai Flip Mitt. One was Thermo Three-Hole FA. Another item was a blue bullfrog rain, and then a 20-ounce Dr. Pepper. The receipt has some specific information regarding these particular items. And these numbers here to the left of the names are something called a stock keeping unit number. Well, I've heard it referred to as a SKU or SKU. The stock keeping unit number is an inventory control number that was unique to Sportsman's Warehouse. It was it would identify that specific item in their inventory control system. There's another number underneath these that's marked UPC, and that's the universal product code. And my understanding is that's a unique identifier given to a product by the manufacturer. There was one particular item on this list that caught my attention, and because of that, I wanted to do additional follow-up on it.
And what item was that?
The Bullfrog Rain. I recognize that name as an item that I was aware was in the possession of the property management company that had cleaned out Lori Vallow's unit, where many of Alex Cox's belongings had ended up after vacating 107.
Was that the same property company that had turned over the cell phone we talked about previously?
Yes.
How had you learned about those pants?
From another investigator, Detective Ray Hermosillo.
Did you end up personally observing that item?
At a later date, I did. Yes.
And this was also a cash transaction?
Yes, it was.
And it was done during the time the data location placed a device associated with Alex Cox in Sportsman's Warehouse?
Yes.
Did you do anything additional in relation to the SKUs or UPCs?
Yes, I requested additional information on site from Sportsman's Warehouse regarding these particular items and what they might be and whether they had any of these items in stock that I could look at. They were able to show me in the store the items that were still in stock. I particularly focused on the top four and not so much the soft drink. But of the first four items, the Woodland Cam item was a Woodland Camo beanie, but it was not in stock and I wasn't able to view it. I was able to view the exact item or similar item for the other three.
And in relation to these items, did you also look for them on the Sportsman's Warehouse website?
Yes. Obviously, the Sportsman's Warehouse sold many of their products online, and you could search those products by name, but also by the SKU and that stock keeping unit number, and you could look at their inventory there. So at a later time, I did look at that as well. Just to make sure the items that I observed in store using that SKU were also the same item, or see if there was additional information regarding them online.
Were you ever able to retrieve an image of the Woodland Camo beanie?
No, I was not.
Were you able to retrieve images of the other three items?
Yes.
What are we seeing in this slide?
Yes. So that item that had been listed on the receipt as a Kenai flip mitt is the item. It's a Glacier Glove Alaska River flip mitt. Now, the SKU is size specific, and so the one that was purchased, according to their inventory system, was a large. They did not have a large in stock, but they did have a small of that. And that is me holding that there in the store, and I took photographs of that item. It's a set of gloves. It's a glove that is a fingerless glove, but also has a mitten portion that can cover the gloves and keep them warm when you don't need manual dexterity with your fingers. But then that can be peeled back to expose the fingers to do tasks that might require additional dexterity. The SKU on this is very similar to large. I think it was maybe off one digit, but the employee helped me determine that was the item. And I later searched it online and confirmed that the item on the receipt was a Glacier Glove Alaska River Flip Mitt large size.
And these would have been purchased in the month of October?
Yes.
And are you familiar with the Eastern Idaho area?
Yes.
Do Octobers tend to be temperature-wise, do you know how they tend to be?
Yeah, Jimin object at this time. It's reaching into speculation.
Sustained.
May I respond?
I think it's just too broad of a question, Ms. Blake, so it's sustained.
What type of tasks are these gloves used for? Or can they be used for?
No, anytime somebody needed to keep their hands warm, but at times were doing tasks that require to use their fingers. maybe manipulating a cell phone or other tasks like tying a fishing knot or shooting a firearm.
And what are we seeing in this slide?
So another item on that receipt was this Thermo three-hole FA. That turned out to be a ski mask. The actual product is an Igloo's three-hole ski mask. They did have one in stock. There was only one size, one color with that SKU. And this is the item on the right in store that I took a picture of. An employee helped me use a handheld scanner they had to scan that item and compare the SKU with the SKU on the receipt, and it was the same. I later went to the Sportsman's Warehouse website and put in that SKU, and they had a photo of the product, and that is on the left. That was what was on their website for the same product.
And again, in relation to the incident involving Tammy Daybell on October 9th, I think you previously indicated, or do you know if the individual that approached her was described to be wearing a mask?
Yes, he was.
And what are we seeing in this image?
So the item that was listed on the receipt as a bullfrog rein was this item. It was a Frog Tog brand, and the bullfrog is the model number or the model name. The bullfrog rein pant. It was a large size according to the SKU. They actually had this item in stock at the store with the same SKU, and it was also a large size. And that photo on the right is a photo that I took of that item in store of what this product looked like. I also took a photo of on the left of the tag with the UPC, which also corresponded to the item that that was on the receipt.
And in addition to that, there's an indication of a Homer J. Maximus search. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. The Homer J. Maximus at gmail.com was the Gmail account associated with Alex Cox's device that I was reviewing. Google, that maintains that Gmail account, maintains a lot of information regarding the use of that Gmail account. And part of the records that we received through the warrants were searches conducted by the Homer J. Maximus account using Google. And one of the searches that was conducted by the Homer J. Maximus account on October 9th, 2019 was Frog Tog sizing for pants.
And do the pants we're seeing here, are they similar or the same as the pants that the company had turned over, the rental company?
Yes. I later went to the Rexburg Police Department and observed the pants from the property management company and compared them, and they were the same pants. They were Frog Tog brand bullfrog rein pants. They were also size large. And the pants from the property management company still had the Sportsman's Warehouse tag on them. So I was able to observe that as well. And that had the same UPC on the tag.
Did you look at additional location data linked to that device for October 9th?
Yes, I did.
Can you tell us what we're seeing in this slide?
So when the device left the Sportsman's Warehouse on October 9th at approximately 1612, it drove north to Highway 20. It drove to Rexburg, but then bypassed the exit that would have normally gone to Alex Cox's residence. It continued north and got off at Salem Road, and then it drove to the vicinity of Chad Daybell's residence at 202 North, 1900 East.
And again, who did Alex Cox know at the Daybell residence?
Chad Daybell.
After being at the Daybell residence, were you able to determine where...
I'm going to object. That's mischaracterization of evidence.
You want to respond to that, Ms. Blake?
I can just re-ask a different question.
Okay, thank you.
Let me restate that. And actually, I want to back up. There's an indication of one particular GPS point. Can you tell us why that's noted in there?
So, yes. The device did not seem to stop at the Daybell residence on that occasion. The device arrives in the vicinity of the Daybell residence at 1650. It then turns eastbound on 200 North. It drives approximately 2 miles to Highway 20. It turns around and then drives back by the Daybell residence approximately 1703 and then goes back southbound on Salem Road. So there didn't appear to be a stop of any significant duration at the Daybell residence, although the device seemed to go by the Daybell residence twice. At 1651, there's a location on the first pass by the residence where there's a location by a canal where we get a data point, and that there's a parking pullout near that spot. After leaving that area, the device then returns to 565 Pioneer Road, 107, arrives there about 7:16. That device then stays there the rest of the night. The last data point on the 9th is at 2353, and the first data point on October 10th is at 0003, and it continues to stay in that unit until 11:28 that morning of the 10th.
And moving to the next slide, can you tell us what we're seeing here?
Yes, this is an image from the software that I was, or the file I was reviewing. This shows those data points that I was referring to. And so in this lower left corner is Salem Road. And that's this yellow line running north and south. This yellow pin in the corner there of that intersection is the Daybell residence. And this road here is 200 North. And this is Highway 20. So as it's coming from, it had been at the Sportsman's Warehouse. It had progressed to this point by 1649 and was driving north or traveling north at driving speed on Salem Road. Here's a data point at 1650. And then there's another one there at 1651 and another one at 1652. The device then travels to Highway 20 and just past Highway 20, it actually turns around here, appears to turn around, reverse course. The final data points are one here at 1701 and then another one in that area at 1703 as the device travels south out of the area and returns to Alex Cox's residence.
And can you tell us what we're seeing on this slide?
So this is a zoomed in image of that same location. The yellow road here on the left is Salem Road or 1900 East. This road is 200 North. And then the yellow pin marks the Daybell residence. And this just shows those two data points at 1651 and 1652 that are by this irrigation canal, which runs under 200 North. The first data point is a GPS data point. And although the next one appears in the same spot, it's a cellular data point with a wider margin of error. So the device could have still been moving at that location. That road, I have been to that location. It is that road is fairly narrow. There aren't a lot of locations for anyone to have parked a vehicle. And except for at that right here, there is a spot where there's a pull off where a vehicle could park. And I believe there's some controls for the irrigation canal there. And there's also a gate into this pasture near that location. This location to the northwest corner of the Daybell residence, I believe near the corner of the garage, is approximately 625 yards.
And talking about that road being narrow and the pull out there, is there anywhere else along that road outside of private driveways where a vehicle could pull out?
Really not that I observed. So the road doesn't have much of a shoulder. It slopes off fairly steeply into ditches. If a vehicle parked along the road, along here, it would be tough to get the vehicle fully out of traffic. Nearby roads, the next one to the east is 2100 East, which is a mile from 1900 East, is my understanding. And then if you travel, say, by foot through the pasture, you run into another canal approximately a mile north as well. So there are a few locations where anyone could park a vehicle except that pull out. But I don't know that he stopped there other than he did drive by that location.
And we talked about the device associated with Alex Cox after being in the vicinity of the Daybell residence, returning to the apartment associated with Alex Cox. Is that correct?
Yes.
Do you recall also talking about looking into some additional devices that were purchased from Walmart?
Yes, I do.
And was one of those devices actually purchased on October 8th?
Yes, that one I pulled that receipt for was purchased on October 8th.
And again, the device or a device associated with Alex Cox was at the Walmart at that same time?
Yes.
And what are we seeing on this slide?
So that it indicates that that device that was purchased at the Walmart was purchased with a cash transaction at the same time that Alex Cox was at the Walmart. That device, which was a track phone, was not activated till the following day for the first time. It was activated on October 9th, 2019 at 1:20 p.m. I've reviewed the transactional records or the call detail records for that particular device, and there are 10 messages with that device on October 9th, 2019 between another device attributed to Chad Daybell. That is between the period of 17:30 to 10:30 p.m. Now, these transactional records were all text messages. There were some attempts to make calls between the two devices, but none of the calls had been completed. So it appears that it was just these 10 text messages between those two devices during that period of time.
And when you talk about the transactional data, were you able to recover the content of those messages?
No, there's no text message content that was retained by the carrier at that particular time.
And would these messages have been around the time of the incident involving Tammy Daybell?
Yes, it would have. That incident happened in between that time.
Were you able to recover any location data associated with that new device?
No. It turned out because it was text messages, the carrier did not retain cellular data for that. And likewise, we were not able to get any other data such as GPS or Wi-Fi information. So we had no location information for those devices. And so we don't know where those devices were when these transactions were taking place.
As part of your investigation, did you look at additional days or focus on additional days in October?
Yes, I did.
And can you tell us what we're seeing in this slide?
Yes. So the device I was reviewing for Alex Cox, his primary device, it takes a trip out of Rexburg on October 16th, 2019. It is last in Rexburg on the 16th at 1339. And it had been at 565 Pioneer Road, number 175, between 1307 and 1339. It then leaves that location and begins to travel south from Rexburg and eventually onto I-15 through Utah. And by 2229 that night, it arrives at the Comfort Inn and Suites Zion Park area in Hurricane, Utah. The device appears to stay there overnight. So the last data point there was at 2355.
And we on the 16th, and then on the 17th, we started, the next data point was 0005. And it stayed there at the Comfort Inn and Suites until 11:11. It then continues traveling at driving speed to Las Vegas, Nevada, and arrives at McCarran International Airport at 13:56. McCarran is now Harry Reid International Airport. It's there from 13:56 to 14:10. And then the device reverses course and travels back to Rexburg without an overnight visit. There were other stops in this trip that not reflected here of gas and restaurants, but just along the routes. It doesn't return to Rexburg until the early hours of October 18th, where it arrives at 148 at 565 Pioneer Road, number 175. It stays there till 155 and then is next in unit 107 from 157 until 948 that morning. At 949, the device is then in 565 Pioneer Road, number 175, where it remains till 1237.
Did that trip to Las Vegas end up having any significance or link to the investigation?
Yes.
And what was that?
Lori Vallow took a flight from McCarran International Airport and eventually went to Hawaii.
Did October 18th have significance in this investigation?
Yes, it did.
And why was that?
The night of October 18th into the 19th, Tammy Daybell died.
Did you look at additional location data for that device for October 18th?
Yes, I did. So after that device left Unit 175 just after noon on the 18th, it traveled to the Idaho Falls, Ammon area, and it went to some businesses there. And the final business it went to was a Chick-fil-A at 3003 South 25th East in Ammon, Idaho. It arrived there at approximately 1958 and stayed there till 2132.
And on that Chick-fil-A, do you recall looking at some photos of Tylee's Jeep and some of the contents?
Yes, I do.
Does that data point, or do those data points correspond with that receipt?
Yes, it does. There was a receipt in that Jeep from that Chick-fil-A for 8:05 p.m. or 20:05. So during the time period Alex's device is at the Chick-fil-A, there was a receipt for the Jeep that fell within that time period for some food and a beverage.
What did you observe next in relation to those data points?
Yes, at approximately 21:32, the device leaves the Chick-fil-A and travels northbound to an area south of the Daybell residence. This map on the right is an image from the file I was reviewing that shows data points as it moved from the Chick-fil-A in Ammon and as it starts to pass Rexburg. So the first it passes Rexburg, and we have data points here at 22:05, and 22:07 is then here at a location at the intersection of Salem Road and Salem Church Road. Now, at that location on the southeast corner of that intersection is a chapel for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And the device then remains at that location for about 38 minutes based on the data I observed. During that 38 minutes, there are 16 data points. They're a combination of GPS and Wi-Fi, and they vary between 11 meters and 122 meters in radius. Then there's a period of time in the data where there is no data. From 2245 until 2353, there's no data whatsoever, no location data. And when we get location data again, it is south of where it had previously been. It's here on Highway 20, just west of Rexburg. That is a Wi-Fi data point with 110 meter radius. After that data point, we continue to get more data points as that device continues to travel south and goes to Idaho Falls. I noted that this data point here is approximately a 7-minute drive from here. So I don't know where this device was when we had no data, but for some reason, if it had been here, it would have taken 7 minutes to get here before we started getting data again.
And you talked about the device then heading to the Idaho Falls area?
Yes.
Did it remain there for the duration of the night?
It did. It went to a hotel.
Are you aware if Alex Cox still had an apartment in Rexburg during that time?
Yes, he was still using Unit 107 and used it after this particular date as well.
And can you tell us what we're seeing in this slide?
So this is a portion of that image that we were just looking at that shows the intersection at Salem Road and Salem Church Road. The church I was referring to is here on this southeast corner. The Daybell residence is marked with this yellow pin here. The distance between these two locations, I believe, is about 2.6 miles. From the data that I reviewed, I did not see any data that had the device going any closer to the residence, the Daybell residence, than this location.
And what are we seeing in this slide?
So this is an image of the church at that intersection, 3462 North Salem Road. The data points that we got, those 16 between 2207 and 2245, are marked here. There's a cluster of data points here, which I believe were the primary, the GPS ones. And then we had some Wi-Fi ones were here with a wider margin of error than these ones on the left. So for roughly that 38 minute period, we got those 16 data points. And then after that, we had nothing for an hour and 8 minutes before receiving the next data point south near Rexburg.
And when we see those data points that appear to be over that residence, is the radius large enough that it would cover a vehicle in the church parking lot?
Yes.
Through the investigation, did you learn of anyone else Alex Cox knew in the vicinity other than Chad Daybell?
No. And that was also the only time I ever saw him go to that location in the 2-month period that I reviewed.
And can you go over what this slide is telling us?
Much of this I've covered already, but this is just indicating the time period from 2207 to 2245 when we received data, and then from 2245 to 2353, there was a gap in data, location data, and then at 2353 on US Highway 20 is the first time data starts coming in again, and then it comes in regularly after that. And that distance from the church to where we got that first data point is a 7-minute drive. So if it had driven from the church to that point, it would have left the church about 2346.
Investigator Wright, do you know when Tammy Daybell was reported deceased?
The morning of October 19th, 2019.
So the morning after this information?
Yes.
And you indicated that you looked at location data associated with this device for the month of October?
Yes.
Does this slide depict the dates in October when the device was somewhere either at the Daybell residence or in the vicinity?
Yes, I observed it go to in the vicinity or to the Daybell residence three times that month. On October 9th, as I previously described, it didn't seem to stop at the Daybell residence, but did drive by the Daybell residence from 1650 to 1703 and made one pass by and another one back by. And then on October 15th, 2019, it went there from 1341 to 1356. And on this occasion, it did seem to stay at the residence, and those data points were near the front of the residence. There were no data points near the rear part of the residence. And then on October 18th, it approached a location somewhat closer to the Daybell residence, though it didn't seem to go to the Daybell residence by the data that I observed. It went to that church 2.6 miles south of the Daybell residence and stayed there for a period of time.
And on two of those three dates, there was something reported that had occurred in regards to Tammy Daybell. Is that correct?
Yes.
I have no further questions.
All right. Mr. Pryor, once you're ready, you can conduct your cross-examination.
And Judge, could I have Exhibit 7, Exhibit 34, and I believe 299 from the state? Those are defense, and then the state's would be 299.
All right, 299 was the one we were just referring to. We'll get 7 and 34 for you.
Sure. Okay. And Judge, could I inquire? The state provided me paper copies of 299 for ease of purpose and fluidity. I'd like to use these through the Elmo device, if that's acceptable to the court, for having the witness address each particular slide. Otherwise, we may have some delay in going through each of the slides with the officer.
The actual Exhibit 299 is the electronic program. It's represented by the print-off in the courtesy copy, which, as I went through, mirrors the same information, essentially printed version of that electronic summary exhibit. I wouldn't have any objection of having it published on the Elmo. Does the state have any concern about that?
No, Your Honor. They are identical. The state has no objection.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Blake. If you'll give me a moment on these other two exhibits, we'll make sure we have those for you, Mr. Pryor.
And to clarify, were those defense exhibits?
I think he said defense exhibits 7 and 34.
Yes, Judge. I believe that's it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. You just hang on. This one up here, too. Thank you. Thank you. Judge, I'm ready, Judge.
Okay. Once you're ready, go ahead and let us know if you're going to publish any of those exhibits.
Not quite yet. I've just got some preliminary questions for the... may I call you Mr. Wright, or what's your...
Problem? Yes, that's fine. Thank you.
Mr. Wright's acceptable?
Yes.
Mr. Wright, your involvement in this case involved a number of different duties. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
You were involved in a search in January, is that right?
Yes.
And who was present with you at that search? Do you recall?
There were numerous officers at that location. That was at the Daybell residence when the Fremont County Sheriff's Office executed a warrant there. The FBI's evidence response team, they were the primary individuals documenting the search and handling and supervising the search. Though other investigators were assisting in searching various rooms for items that were on the list of items that could be seized.
And you were present for that search as well?
Yes, I was.
Were you advised of all of the findings and the evidence, if any, that was obtained or information that was obtained as part of that search?
Yes, the evidence response team did a report on their findings, though the evidence, I believe, went to the Fremont County Sheriff's Office, seized the actual evidence, but there was a report that was produced that I had a chance to review.
Okay. And then in addition, was it at that time that there were use of some dogs to search the property as well on that date?
I don't believe there were. I'm sorry, you're talking about January 3rd? Yeah, I don't believe there were any dogs present on that date.
Okay. Were you present at any time when there were use of dogs on the property?
Yes, I was.
When was that?
On June 9th, 2020.
Now, as far as the search of the apartments of Alex Cox and Lori Vallow at 575 Pioneer, were you present for those searches as well?
I was not.
And the information that you're obtaining was from Officer Ray Hermosillo?
Which piece of information?
Well, just the frog tog suit, the mask, and that information.
Yes, the information I obtained regarding frog tog purchase, I did that at Sportsman's Warehouse. And then the item that was seized by the Rexburg Police Department, I wasn't there when it was seized, but I later went there and observed from their observed that in their custody by the Rexburg Police Department and made that comparison.
Okay. So from your information, it was Officer Hermosillo who was in charge of the search of the apartment and the garage at 107 and 175 Pioneer Road.
So there was more than one search at those addresses. So when I was first notified about the missing child, JJ, that was on November 27th, 2019. And the Rexburg Police Department, as my understanding, had been to that site the previous day to do the welfare check and had returned on the 27th to do a search. So at that search, there were no federal officers involved in that search. They were calling us to tell us their findings that they hadn't been able, they'd gotten into the apartments and hadn't found the children. So my understanding is they seized items of evidence on that occasion.
And then that occasion was the 27th of November?
I believe so.
And your contact person who would have the information relating to the items that were seized as a result of that search, would that be Officer Hermosillo?
Yes, I understand he was the lead detective on the case. I spoke with him multiple occasions, and his supervisor was Lieutenant Ron Ball. They had another detective that assisted with the case, but he also seemed to be the primary evidence person, and that was Randy Reese, I believe. That often when questions of evidence came up, Randy seemed to be the person in the know about that.
But the lead detective and the one who would be apprised of all of the information would have been Officer Hermosillo.
Yes.
Okay. Now you spoke a little bit about the September 8th visit to Yellowstone.
Yes.
And it appears that they left just before 12 o'clock on the 8th.
Yes, that's when they left Rexburg.
And then at what point did you find that they were back in Rexburg?
I believe they got to the 565 Pioneer Road at 2037 that evening. And that was unit 175 is where I first started seeing data there in Rexburg after the Yellowstone trip.
And at that point, the exit video leaving Yellowstone only determined that there was a license plate that left. There was no indication of any passengers or the condition of any passengers in the car. Is that fair?
Yes, that's fair.
And again, if I could put this up, Judge on Elmo, publish judge.
We can publish that. Yeah.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.